This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
I always love doing something to do with art, but the environment growing up in China is like, if you do something to do with art, you're a loser. You know, like it's only the people who don't behave at school will choose doing art. I believe people need to speak up about it. That's why, because we all live in fear. That's why it's no good. We're not doing well. That's part of the reason I want to write. I want to be artist is because if no one's going to say, nothing's going to change. There's no change.
That was CD17, who is today's guest, discussing the importance of the arts. And part of this conversation serves as an important reminder of the power we all hold as individuals to speak up. 17 is a techno music artist, DJ, painter, and poet who grew up in the Yunnan province of China. I had never spoken in depth with somebody who grew up in China and what that experience was like. And she shares that and how tough it was coming out of that environment to pursue an unconventional path and what she had to overcome to follow her dreams. We discuss her book, The Weights We Carry is the title, which contains poems from a solo bikepacking journey around the Scottish Highlands and the Orkney Islands. She shares how this trip helped her heal and rediscover her own power, what the adventure was like, and how it impacts her to this day. And this story just might inspire you to, as 17 wrote on the back of her book, quote, jump on a bike, go on a journey, dive deep into the self, and let the weight of my human identity dissolve into the wind, end quote. Let's get into it, shall we? Buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is a show to help you travel the world on your terms to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. You heard at the top today's guest, CD17, going by 17, as you'll hear in this interview. And I do want to mention that there is discussion of suicide and suicidal ideation in this show. If you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts or a crisis, please reach out immediately to a suicide prevention hotline near you. Every country has a number you can call. And with that said, let's get into my conversation with 17. By the way, her book, The Weights We Carry, is only available as a physical copy. It is not sold as an ebook. And that is because 17 wanted to encourage everyone to get off social media, off their chair, out into the outdoors, and to explore new possibilities. So enjoy my chat with 17. Stick around on the back end. I'll leave you with a quote from the book as well as some thoughts on the interview. Thanks for listening. Have you done a lot of podcasts before?
Only once. Not really a podcast. It's like a radio show, but it's more to do with my DJing stuff.
Yeah, you're a DJ.
Yes.
What kind of music do you play?
Techno.
I see your decks in the back.
Yes.
Nice.
Old happy days.
Yeah. Do you spin vinyl or do you use like the Serato? Is it Serato or the system where you...
CDJs, the really fancy, but you don't need much skill sort of stuff. Just press sync. There's no chance you make a mistake.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. What do you like about DJing?
To be honest, because I used to be like, oh, I'm going to be the coolest teenager. So...
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're a DJ, you're kind of in charge of the party in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, because I'm very socially anxious. Not now anymore, like, not so bad, but before I'm so socially anxious. I don't want to speak to anyone at the party, so I can be a DJ. So
Did that help you get over that?
Oh yeah, like no one's gonna talk to me, and then you know, like I'm busy DJing. Don't talk to me.
Yeah, right.
And then when I finish, people come to talk to me. I was like, "Oh, you play a great set." I'm like, "Yeah, thank you, bye."
I don't know. That sounds like the opposite of what I would think, because as a DJ, you're kind of like the center of attention, right? So, but if you're not letting them talk to anybody, you don't want to kind of. Yeah, it's like two worlds colliding.
Yes. And trust me, lots of DJ like become a DJ because they're so anxious.
So it, I mean, I guess it worked out. It made you a little more, helped you get over your social anxiety in some ways, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
how has that been for you?
How has that been for me?
Yeah, that journey of getting comfortable with, yeah, interacting in that way and things like, because I mean, some people might be listening that struggle with the same thing. So I'm just curious as to how that's been for you.
It's been very helpful, like personally, because like I'm from China, and then we tend to be more introverted. So I'm getting much more comfortable, like saying I'm going to a room, I'm not scared, I'm be able to be there, and if I want to speak to anyone, I can. I'm not gonna be like, oh, I'm so scared. And also, be able to read people's energy. So I like kind of like I put the like the job of a DJ putting a track which match the energy of the crowd, which is something very, very useful. So like, say, you're going to want to negotiate something, and then you can pick it up. Okay, this person is probably feeling like this, so I better say stuff this way. But I also can, if I don't have if I have an ill intention, I can be very manipulative.
Don't do that today. No, I'm kidding. No, well, I'm excited to have you here because a lot of this stuff that we're talking about is already, I can feel it, like I can think it in my head how it's crossing into what we're going to talk about today. And well, we're going to talk about your book of poetry. Super cool. I've got it right here. Thanks for the copy. The Weights We Carry, Poems from a Solo Bikepacking Journey Around the Scottish Highlands and the Orkney Islands by CD17. And I should say, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend. And you go by 17, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Congrats on the book. And yeah, you talked about the energy of the crowd and matching that as a DJ. And I mean, what's pretty cool about this, having had an opportunity to go through a nice good old fashioned paper copy of a book, yay, is seeing how the photography and the views match the poems you wrote at the time of the journey. And, you know, in some ways it was kind of making me think about the book when you said matching the music with the energy of the crowd, because you're really the energy of the poem that you've written on this particular view of this thing you're looking at. I mean, to me, like, right, it has to be somewhat infused with some of the energy of that place and what you were taking in. It's like a combination of you, who you are in that moment and what you're feeling, and then the actual geographic physical location you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that energy exchange like for you?
Interesting question. I don't know how to answer this. It never came across my mind. Change one question.
Okay, well, let's talk about growing up in China then. I know some of the psychologists that have influenced you and stuff like that. There's something with the subconscious and the unconscious mind. Maybe your unconscious or your subconscious mind can work on that question. We talk about some other stuff. This is a big part of your journey. It sounds like you moved to the UK when you were 17 years old on your own to study psychology at King's College in London. Tell me about that time. Like, how did you end up doing that on your own? Why and why psychology?
Like, to be honest, every time I tell this story to people, it's going to be a different version.
That's storytelling, right? Ideally, yeah. The story gets better each time, right?
Yeah. 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 So I always love doing something to do with art, but the environment growing up in China is like, if you do something to do with art, you're a loser. you know, like it's only the people who don't behave at school will choose doing art.
Oh, really?
So, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, wow. So I wanted to study filmmaking or music, and then my parents don't agree. And then I'm like, oh, you better choose something academic. And then I'm like,
That's not who I am.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, maybe I choose psychology because anyways, it's kind of like convertible to anything I want to do. Yeah, so I chose psychology. And then like moving to UK on my own, I think it's such a thing lots of Chinese people need to face because it's super competitive in the country when you're trying to get into university. And the competition is, it's not so necessary, and there's such a stigma. They were like, oh, you can't handle the pressure in the country, that's why you fleeting aboard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that the perception?
Yeah, there is such a perception, but it's totally not true. Like when we're applying to school in the UK, it's super difficult. Like, yeah. Like we need to make sure the language we do, like that it's behaving. and then we say, for example, people doing A-level, they take like, well, I didn't do A-level, I did AP, but normally people would do like 5-6 of them. But most of my classmates, we did like 12 in order to get out of the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the culture a little bit more, this idea that if you pursue art, you're a loser. Because this is fascinating to me, because I'm not going to say there's a variation of this in all cultures, because it might be... I've never been to China and I've never lived there. So I'm only going on with the cultural context that you share here today. You know, there are all these sort of stereotypical things around art and artists, I think, in various cultures. But that sounds like pretty extreme, you know, where you're coming from. Like that's like next level, kind of like, okay, if you pursue this, you're a loser, in your words. I mean, that's pretty harsh. Well, I'm curious, like, you know, when artists make it. I mean, you have, you know, famous pop artists or famous sculptors or painters or whatever, like every country, and those people are known, and I imagine they're respected. So I don't understand the disconnect. Like, why is it that people can look at established artists in China and like admire them and respect their work, but then, you know, they have to start somewhere. So then if somebody's pursuing the arts, they look at them completely differently. Why is that?
I think it's to do with the education system. It's been set up. It's like it's just so odd. Like if you're doing arts, you probably don't use your brain so much, because if you're doing arts, you're probably using your sense, your intuition more than using, you know, your logical brain. And also if you're doing art, you're probably less likely to obey. But then in our education system, we have to obey. Like even in the history class, we were like, oh, you're probably not say, like the actual history is, you know, it's still debatable. Like even nowadays, we still didn't know what exactly it's a certain thing. Like if it's true, what's been told, you argue about it. And the teacher was like, shut up. What I say is right. Like you don't, this is what's going to ask you in the exam. You have to do exactly what I told you.
Yeah, and it's not allowed to, I guess, speak out or disobey.
Yeah.
So how does that work as a student in that system, that everything inside of you sounds like it was telling you, like, this isn't something about this is messed up, at least for you, right? And you must have had some other friends that felt the same way. How does that work growing up in that school system like that, when you're feeling, do you just kind of suffer through it? Or are you like forming secret groups with your friends to like talk about these things in private? Or like, how do you kind of get through that when you feel the opposite?
Yeah, of course, like, well, and like secretly we're bitching about it, right. But it's sad. It's like, even though we're bitch about, we can't do anything.
Yeah, because like of the system.
Like, It's something like, I'm sure like not everyone have the bad experiences I do. But then there, when I was, it was in primary school, like in on the fourth grade, like the teacher would actually come into the class and then say, oh, now is the time you're going to tell me. And is any of your classmates is been bitching about anything about me, about the system? And if you don't, it's a bit insane. So it's basically we don't trust each other. And then they will literally tell us, anyone sit next to you is going to be your competitor. And you shouldn't be friend with them.
Mm, wow. Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit extreme.
And would you say, is this typical of... You came from the Yunnan province, right? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. Is this typical of that area, or is this sort of typical if you had to... I know, of course, things... It's a huge country, so... But, I mean, would you say this is sort of the general system across all the countries? Is more typical to your area?
A public school.
Public school, okay.
I also went to, very shortly, public school in Beijing. It's even worse. It's like 60 people, almost 70 people in a class, and there's one teacher. And then like, that was like second year of my primary school. So if you need to bribe the teacher, you need to give them like gifts so you can sit in front of the, like at the front row of the classroom. If you don't do that, you're going to be on the back.
And that's like a known thing?
Well, like it's like, you know, like okay. Secret rule. I'm sure like nowadays it's much better. Like people actually, you know, deal with it. But like when I was in primary school, it's like that. Like there were even classmates like taking like the teacher going to travel in Europe. So they always sit on the first front row of the classroom. It's just like
yeah.
Incredible.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I'm sorry I'm asking so many questions about this, but it's just fascinating to me because...
Ask. I want more people to know.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Also seeing that in your journey of this book of poetry, you're a painter, you've been a DJ, you have embraced the artist within, let's say. And of course, like... By the way, I should say that's a total fallacy, right? That like artists don't lose their logical minds. That's completely untrue. Of course, artists use their logical mind like anybody else to solve problems and things. It's interesting when the general perception is not that across like an entire country and an entire system. I don't know if that was your teacher or if that's just like system, like they actually teach the teachers to pit the students against each other, meaning, you know, create mistrust within the group of students so they compete and they don't trust each other. Is that like a systemic thing or is that just like it was that teacher's strategy?
Well, I'm not so confident to say it's like everywhere, but right. I've been hearing a story like this quite a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something else. It's not so. And also, like when I'm saying this, because like they always have this thing. So in China, if you have like a piece of art or like a film, there was like a specific government organization. They're gonna check every single line you write in it. Is it gonna be suitable? Is it going to be proper to speak about it? And it's been hammered into our brain. So when I'm speaking this with you, like I'm like still like on the back of my brain. Oh, is this line I'm supposed to say?
Are you? Can you get in trouble for the things you're saying right now? Is it like that?
Oh, well, I'm not in China. I probably can't.
No. But I mean, can you not go back now because of?
It depends on what I say.
Really?
But okay. so far I'm safe. I didn't say anything. It's so explicit.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't want to get you in any trouble. I mean, it's a...
No. I believe any as people needs to speak up about it. That's why, because we all live in fear. That's why it's no good. We're not doing well. That's part of the reason I want to write. I want to be artist is because if no one's going to say, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
There's no change.
Right. I love that you do that. Thank you for that. Thanks for that. I mean, it is like, well, it's important to remember that individuals make a difference, you know? and individuals speaking out make a difference. You know, thinking about that, I mean, just a little bit you've told me and trying to kind of put myself in your shoes, I mean, I have two small kids, so it breaks my heart to think that that type of environment would be pushed on them at any age, but such a young age. I mean, you can only imagine how many talented artists, how much talent is thrown away just because of the way the system is working.
Yeah. And those, not just artists, also athletes are being locked down.
Sure. Engineers, any, you know, everybody.
No, engineers is fine. Engineers being locked down.
Yeah, I guess that was a bad example. Engineers, doctors, and lawyers, that's all acceptable, or, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's more like the academic kind of, like, generally, traditionally, let's say, within the last industrial revolution, that perception of what's the word I'm looking for? Like a high value position, or somebody that society sees as important, let's say. I'm using air quotes.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel, and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Now, back to the show. What about the other parts of your culture that you carried with you to the UK? I mean, it sounds like this area of China.
Oh, the beauty, yes. Yeah. The freedom I have. It's also, how do I say? Yeah, from the area I grew up, it has so many different ethnicities. It's a very, like, it's just very colorful. I can't describe it. It's something very unique. It's unlike any other places. Like the way of how they dance, how they make music. It's very raw. It's unpolluted by the mainstream, but I'm not sure if nowadays it's still like that because now we have TikTok.
I see what you're saying. There was a bit of for the culture coming out of your region, it was a bit more sheltered or perhaps untouched by the mainstream. So perhaps there's a purity to that.
Yes, yes. And then that's been like, be with me. Like, by the way, like I grew up there, but my parents are not from there. So it's kind of like...
Not from that area.
They're not, yeah, not from that area. So I'm kind of like, the land take me as their kid. So they're very selfless. Like the villagers, when we were in the village, they take me as their kids. My parents are always so busy. So they would go to the town to do business, and then they would like leave me with the villagers. And then I just go to their house, eat, sleep, hang with their kids. So it's very, very lucky of me. So I like, because of those people in Yunnan, they're so pure, they're so genuine. So when I later on, when I experience the dark side of how people can be, I'm not like losing my hope, being like, oh, you know, I'm going to become one of those people.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
Explain a little bit about that, like what you just described. That the village would, you know, there's the saying, it takes a village to raise a child or whatever. And I know in some places, you know, that's like an expression that we use in the West, like meaning, you know, you need a lot of help. And I remember I took my kid to daycare one day, and there was one of the mothers was from Gambia, I think. And she literally was explaining to me, like, literally the village takes care of the child. Like, they run, you know, might run, like, one person in the village might, like, get them dressed and another one might feed them breakfast. They're all, like, sort of taking care of each other's children. And I thought that was just so nice and a nice idea. And can you describe a bit more about sort of, like, yeah, daily life as a kid there? Like, what that actually looked like? Like, walk me through a day.
Oh, so I'm a very lazy kid. I like to sleep in.
But I mean, well, if you have school and stuff, you can't sleep in, right?
Well, I never went to kindergarten.
Okay. So you're talking about when you're really young.
Yeah, but not, I mean, like in my primary school. I went to the town.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a lazy kid. I'm like always sleeping, and like the older kids will come to knock my door. Like my parents, they're trying to wake me up, but I won't. And they will call the older kids, which I like them. So they will like just call these lazy kids to wake up. And we would wake up. And then in my hometown, we have like this temple. And then it's just like in the morning, you have to go counterclockwise to pray. So the older people, they will actually go pray properly. And then we would just like running around and annoying the cows, annoying all the trees, go around. And then when they went into the temple, and then we all get the blessing. They will put like the water thing on your head, and then all that. It's very enjoyable, very funny. We all like, every time we go, we laugh. And then we just, after that, it's going to be like midday-ish. We go back. So other people is going to go prepare the food, and then we can choose to help prepare the food, or we can go pick up some.
At just whoever's house, like anybody's house in the village kind of thing, or?
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's not much people. So we would discuss like, okay, where are we going to eat in the, like this afternoon? Well, it's not everyone in the village are like in this group, but like five family of us are very close.
Yeah.
So we would go pick stuff, and then we go, you know, we get prepared, and then we eat, have a nap in the afternoon, and then and when we wake up from the afternoon, we would, you know, like they were like, oh, we would drive you, because like we're high up in the mountains, and then we would drive maybe to the town, maybe we go to somewhere, ride horses. Apparently we can't, but those older ones, they would, and we would just like sitting around, play mud, something like that. Yeah. And then come home, because we don't have electricity when I was young, so we come back home, we play some music, we dance. And that's it. Very simple life. Very happy. Yeah, that's why like we always be like, when I moved to Beijing, they were like, oh, have you ever like properly trained as a singer? I was like, no, every single person in the village can sing like this.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Just because it's part of the village life.
Yeah. And then people, because like we're in the 3,000 meter above sea level, lots of mountains, and then sometimes you need to call someone across the like on another side of the mountain. You just kind of scream, but then you also like can you sing like one part of the song, and they're gonna sing back. So, yeah, that's also like something very fun to do.
That's so cool. So yeah. You had a lot of freedom without your parents around. I mean, you said your parents were at work somewhere, or?
Yeah, they have their own business, and they are quite busy. Sometimes I go travel with them, but sometimes like if they go somewhere really far, they just leave me in the village.
And they just trust that. I mean, they just obviously have it worked out, I guess. So people, you know, everybody, this whole little group knows each other, so you would be taken care of, and you had a lot of freedom without the parents around, I guess. So that, I mean, that sounds like in many ways a good environment for an artist like yourself to come up in, right? To have that freedom to explore. And
yeah, it's very fun.
Do you think that contributes to the creative work you do now?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. In what way?
Like lots of the time, like when I graduated from university, I'm actually not creative, like not much, because it's been a long time. I'm only doing like academic stuff, but I have to like find a way that I can create again. I just like just try to remember what were you doing when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, it's great advice for everybody listening, right?
Yeah.
And when you say remember, you mean the actual activities or also like the feeling?
The feeling, like how I was, how kind of like carefree I was.
It's a great way to go into a project if you're creating something, right? To kind of embrace that carefree kid, you know, because I see my kids draw and it's just like, I think everything's perfect. It's just the way it comes out. And that's like the point, right? And not being afraid to, well, there's like doing something wrong, like coloring outside the lines, which isn't doing something wrong, you know, but it could be perceived as that. Or then just having your own standard. So it's wrong to you. Like when you're writing a poem, I write songs, you write poems. And I mean, you could probably relate to this with words, certain cadences or things. You're just like, no, this isn't the right word. It's not because it's wrong, because it's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You're writing your poems in a foreign language. And I know like in some of the stuff I read about you, it said that it taught you how to be brave and to make mistakes and embrace flaws and new possibilities. Talk about that a little bit, because it sounds like it ties in with some of the carefree childhood feelings we're talking about as well.
Oh, yeah. So there was one thing I think is worth to mention. So in China, because like we've been invaded by the Western country before, so we still have that scar on us. So we still look up a lot to the Western society. And if you speak English, you're like kind of cooler than the average. Basically, I was quite like talented in music, so I'm quite good at learning language somehow. Like, you know, like I'm just good at like copying. So there was a long time because I'm good at English, and then I feel kind of like superior than my peer. But then that caused a problem. It's just like once I moved to Beijing, I found there were like people, they actually lived abroad, or they're actually like one of their parents are native English speakers. And I found like I'm inferior than others. And for a long time, when I first moved to UK, I just don't feel confident at all. Because like, yeah, like I always like when I speak to others, I'm so tensed up. I'm like that my grandma is gonna be wrong. And then the way I speak is going to be not so, you know, like you'd be able to tell, like I'm not so good in my vocabulary or whatever. And this is actually what I learned in my course. It's like, oh, we all always come up with something. We change the language anyways. So you should own, like if you speak a certain language, you should own the language and then speak the language in your own way. So like, yeah. And gradually I'm just like, oh, like fine. I'm just going to speak English in my own way. Like I always like making like jokes, like when we, cause in the electronic music scene, there's like, if you're like a pretty girl walking around, there's always like creepy man following around. And I always tell like my friend, I was like, look, oily man. And then like everyone start being like oily man. And then it doesn't exist before in English. Like, everyone is like, oh, such a great expression, like someone being so oily is so good. yeah. And then I'm just like, oh, then like if I can speak it in daily life, like own the language, speak in my own way, then I can, you know, I can probably try it in poetry. And then just because it's something like it's not really what everyone knows, so it can be symbolic. So actually it's a disadvantage, but in poetry it can become an advantage. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it. I live in Norway. I don't know if you know, and I speak Norwegian, but it's the same struggle that I can totally relate to this, because I, you know, sometimes talk to my neighbors and they look at me funny because obviously I don't know the exact expression or the right way to say it. So this is nice for me to take in, to think, oh, maybe I just speak it in my own way and everybody will accept the crazy American.
Yeah.
But writing, go ahead.
I just say like before I was like quite scared. I'm like, am I doing this right? Am I speaking it right? Like I found, so you know, like socially I'm not so interesting, so charismatic. But then once I started, be like, I'll just like give up. I just speak whatever the way I want. And I found like actually like I become more popular in a way.
Ah, that's cool. Other people, of course, can be attracted to just, you know, people that feel like comfortable with themselves, right? It's just like, well, hey, yeah, this is whatever. This is how I speak right now. This is the level I'm at. It's constantly, I mean, it's like learning a language, at least for me, is a constant, it's an ongoing thing. And you know, Norwegian to English, I mean, we have some words that are very similar. You went from Mandarin, I guess, to English. That's completely different. a lot to learn.
Yes. I speak lots of Chinglish, which doesn't make any sense.
But when you write poems, they're beautiful. And I've been really enjoying going through and looking at the pictures and checking them out. We should talk a little bit about the book, and we'll link to it, of course, in the show notes, because you can only buy a paper copy, I think, right?
Yes.
And you don't have a website for it or anything, or is it just a...
There is a website.
We'll link to it when we put the episode out. Can you talk about the genesis or the reason for the trip in the first place? Why a solo bikepacking trip and around the Scottish Highlands? Like why the Scottish Highlands? Why solo? Why bikepacking? Had you done any of those things before?
So the year before this thing happened, I went there once, and that was like the first year of lockdown, and it's like kind of like the darkest time of my life. Very dramatic of me, but
really, why?
Because my parents, they wanted me to go back to China because there's coronavirus going on. But then I've always struggled to live in China, and I have friends here. I just don't want to go, so I decided to not go, and then they were very angry about it. So they kind of like not really speaking to me.
Oh my gosh.
But then the thing is, it's locked down. I stayed in London by myself, and then I didn't really like the psychology course at that time. Like I really wanted to quit for many times. I was, how to say, living with like a really manipulative artist. Not really, he's a lazy artist.
Oh, you were like with a partner who wasn't...
No, it's not a partner. It's like it's just a flatmate, and then like we get along very well. Like he's like way older than me, and then we both like electronic music, both like art, and he was like, oh, I need a flatmate. I was like, oh, sure, I'll stay, and I stayed. But then things didn't. It's not a very good situation. But I was so young, I was not be able to tell like what's wrong, like that. Yeah, like when was it? Like. Not so young, like 20. So
okay, yeah. But I mean, it was like not, you mean it was like sort of toxic in a way, and
like just every time I put out like a set, he would say something. You know, it's good, but you know, it's, you know, the behind the curtain is not a genuine. It's a good set. And then when I put on like events, like my own events, and he would like trying to do something like, you know, it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Not supportive.
No. Yeah. Not as what he said on the surface is supposed to be. And it just make me feel, how to say, I'm not actually good. Like people like my work because they just want to be polite. And then it's just not so nice. And also there was other stuff like happening a bit earlier in my life, and when I was like 17-ish, it's quite traumatizing, and I didn't really recover from it. And my parents didn't really like want to have a comment on it. So that time I'm basically like on my own, and I don't have like solid friend in London.
Wow. Oh, and, gosh. Yeah. That sounds really hard.
Yeah, so like the first time I went to Scotland, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to find somewhere quiet and then go kill myself.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. That's
yeah, but
that's dark. That's a tough place. I mean, that's the worst place to be, right? I mean, get down.
Yeah, now I look back, I'm not sure if it's a bad place or I'm just being like an annoying emo teenager.
Well, I mean, listen, if it comes up as a topic in your head, it's something to take seriously, right?
Yeah, it was difficult. But now I look back at it, I'm like, I can manage, not a problem. But yeah, anyways, and I went there, I met like the... So random. I stayed in the B&B and then there was this woman. She does like triathlon and she's like, oh, you look not very happy. Like, are you having like difficulties in your life? Like she's like, maybe you should go try to climb a mountain and then you can go cycle around and see how it goes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, a good idea. And then I actually did. I went to climb a mountain.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and then it's like the mountain, like it was the mountain climbing journey was actually so funny. It was like, I was like, oh, this place is so quiet, perfect place to accomplish suicide.
You were still, yeah.
Yeah, and on another hand, it's like, oh, maybe climb to the top of the mountain so you at least accomplish something for yourself in your life, you know, and. So I'm like, the whole time I was like, oh, you should kill yourself. Oh, climb to the top of the mountain. And then when I actually climbed the top of the mountain, I was like, it's actually not so bad. I want to like do something more interesting. So I left the mountain. I kept cycling. And the exercise itself make me like, gave me some, you know, power. I'm not so weak anymore. So when I'm back to London, when I'm facing the life here, I'm like, okay, I know like how to set boundaries a little bit better. Yeah. And then the second time, like when I finished my university, I was like, yes, like I look into my life. I was like, I've done nothing for myself. Like everything I chose, like it seems like I chose for myself, but no, it's either I chose because my culture said so, because my parents said so, because my fear, because whatever. I never accomplished anything which I'm proud of myself. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna leave all this behind. I'm just gonna go to cycle this whole route like on my own, and I'm not gonna, you know, they were like, oh, there was another thing I'm a little bit funny about. Like normally when Chinese people travel, like you either go with like a group, like, you know, it's 20 minutes, go to the palace and you know, take a picture, get on the bus, next one, something like that, and then or you just go with like a, you know, like something fancy. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna do any of that. I'm gonna do something actually fun. I decided like within 2 weeks, once I submitted my dissertation, I'm like, what am I doing now? Like, yeah, I'm also worried about my visa at that time. I'm like, better do something before everything collapsed. So I went by myself, Scotland. Oh, because Scotland, there you can't see, almost can't see much people. And then I always get annoyed when I see a lot of people. So that's why it's Scotland.
So the first trip where you met the woman and she suggested you climb the mountain, that was in Scotland as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same region, and you decided to go back, just to be clear, to the same sort of area, right?
No, she lives in Nairn, which is like south, more south than Inverness.
Yes,
but then
gotcha.
I went to the more north bit, and I met a lot of very nice people on the trip.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. I always love to hear stories about somebody who just kind of said something that changed somebody's life forever. It sounds like just that moment of climbing the mountain for you was a pretty pivotal moment in your life. there's a lot of symbolism there too. I mean, it's not often you hear like actually you climb to a top of a mountain and it's poetic, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's yeah, of course. And also that's just Scotland itself. It's very poetic. I'm not sure about all of the Chinese people, but like from my like if I think about stereotype, it's like Irish and Scottish people are very poetic. Yeah, kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of wonderful writers coming out of.
Yeah,
they're I'm like, not sure if it's because of the weather
drunk,
or
drunk yeah. and emotional.
Yeah, they can always spin a good yarn, I guess, as they say. The travel aspect of this, I mean, it sounds like you said, you chose to do something that, again, this is another like countercultural thing for you, right? You're like, generally Chinese people travel this way or this way, and I'm going to do it this way. And it seems like that's sort of a constant in your life too. It's kind of like, let me pick the thing that's countercultural to the culture that I grew up in and explore it as a means of expression, I guess. The trip itself, did you have an intention going into it outside of just going to have a travel experience? Did you mean to write a book of poetry? Were you using it as like a framework to figure out what to do next in life? Or like, you know, what was the trip to you going into it, and what did it turn into coming out of it?
Like that time, I'm very believing like Jung's theory of individuation. To me, like I'm just talking about what I understand, but because I didn't come back to the theory of Jung for a year and a half now, so not gonna be accurate. But from my point of view, like if you reach individuation, means you become like a proper independent individual. Like your culture is no longer dictating you. What your ancestors did is not gonna dictate your decision anymore. So lots of like unconscious stuff like within you can cause you do something. Like you thought you'd made a decision, but you're not making a decision. It's like a natural flow which is pushed by the unconscious side of your psyche. And if you're fully like at reach
individuation. It's a hard word. Individuation. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So kind of like you integrated the shadow part of your psyche, and you're fully kind of like fully aware. So you are, to me, it's like, okay, now you break through all the cage. Your fate is in your own hand. And that's my intention. It's something so funny. Like I'm not sure. Like yeah, my mom. She's, I mean, everyone's mom probably a little bit superstitious. Like she used to like getting me like astrology readings, Chinese astrology readings, like all this stuff. And they were like, oh, you're probably gonna be, you know, this. You're gonna be that. And then every time I was, oh, am I gonna become a good musician? I probably not. I was like, I don't believe that. And also, like, there's something so, and I'm always, like, I'm very scared about. Like, my mom is always, like, giving me a vibe, like, oh, all the men you're going to find in your life is going to be, you know, very, very bad men. It's like, you're never going to find, like, real love. That doesn't exist. And I'm like, I don't believe it. I don't believe that's my fate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a conscious rejection of the things that are put upon you from culture, society, parents.
Yeah.
When parents say certain things, it's very powerful. So you have to defend against that in some ways, right? Like, and I love my parents, but of course there's certain things that I don't agree with philosophically that I have to just make sure, okay, I don't adopt that, like, subconsciously. Don't adopt that idea just because it was said to you repeatedly on occasions growing up, or, you know, like money would be like a thing for me, you know, money related kind of philosophies or mindsets that I had to sort of dig out, like weeds, dig the weeds out of the mental garden, so to speak. We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. So that trip was an exploration of your individuation. Hey, we're making poetry.
Yeah.
An exploration of your individuation.
It rhymes.
Yeah, it rhymes. It rhymes. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm not trying to turn this into like a rap song or something, but...
please do. It's funny.
I'm having a great time chatting with you. Now, this is really interesting. But that's a pretty big intention. You're like, all right, I'm going to go into this solo biking journey, and then I'm going to, you know, sort of break free of all this stuff that's been implanted on me in my whole life. What happened? How did that? I mean, were you just thinking about this every day, or like? Talk about the experience, and now that you can reflect back on it, I guess just share the actual experience, because like that's the other thing with travel, right? Like we can create these trips and these frameworks and have these intentions, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to come to fruition, or that's like, you know, we're going to walk the, you know, the Camino de Santiago, and at the end, I'm going to be healed from my trauma, or whatever. Like, it's a lot of expectation to put on a trip. So I always think there's this balance between having, like, you can have an intention around like a trip like this, but also being okay that if like everything that you wanted to be realized from that isn't necessarily accomplished, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But talking about the trip, it's like, because I'm cycling and so I can't look at my phone. And then like, I think the first half of the trip, I think I cycle like 6 to 8 hours per day. Well, the whole thing is not that long, but I was like taking small places so like I can get distracted. Like, so my brain is not stuck. So I'm like, you know, just exercise and then like let things like go over. Like kind of like I hate being one of those namaste people. but yeah, like you, when you're doing meditation at the beginning, your mind is really not stabilized. It just like... everything goes around like you go in and say, I'm a worry about this, worry about that, what am I gonna become, what am I gonna accomplish, am I gonna be such a cool person, la 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 li, li, li. And it's just tiring. So that's the first half of the trip, and then there was like, it's very, very interesting. It's like magically there was one day I wake up and I cycle, I'm like, oh, let's start, you know, I'll just let the brain go jumping around, and it stopped, it just empty. Like, it's interesting, like it reflected in the poem. Let me find like there was one section, you probably can tell.
Well, if you want to read it for us, like the whole thing, I'd love for you to read one of your poems. It doesn't have to be this one, but it would be nice. Or you can read it later and we can, like, I don't want to put you on the spot, and we can share it at the end of the show or something. But.
Okay, probably later. But I'm okay. Just saying, like, at the beginning, like the first three sections, I have a lot of criticism on like everything, like, oh, this religion thing is not going, like, it's not behaving. There's like dodgy stuff going on with religions. There's dodgy stuff going on with our country. There's dodgy stuff there. There's dodgy stuff there. There's dodgy stuff in like mainstream belief in relationship everywhere. Like, I'm like, nothing is going, nothing's right. Nothing behaves. And like out of a sudden, it's like, I think from section 4 and 5, like that at that time, like my brain is just empty, and then there's actually like proper, I from my point of view, like especially the last section, as like more like proper poetry comes out. Like before is more like, you know, like my Instagram posts, like, you know those, how to say, let me find a funny one. let me find a funny one.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you heard about it, but like I love this book. It's so funny. It's like something like, it is your blood in my veins. Tell me how I'm supposed to forget. You know this really popular poet. Milk and Honey, the author that write that. It's like you don't need to learn how to write. You don't need to learn how to write poem. All you need is to learn how to change lines. That's basically how I started. I write something, you know, like random stuff, and I change lines or poetry. I change the end, let it rhyme. Poetry. But yeah, not necessarily something.
So it's called
impressive.
Milk and Honey? Is that the name of the book? Or?
Yeah. Oh. No, I'm not sure I'm going to get lots of hate about it, but anyway.
No, so. I hadn't heard of that.
Please have a look. It's funny.
Okay.
It's so entertaining.
Is it the one by Rupi Kaur?
Yes. Okay. Have a look.
Is it funny, you said?
It's funny. Like, I even made a joke in my book. I just read like one line. I said, how much do I deserve to relax? I was like, exactly, contemporary poetry. You don't need to rhyme. You don't need the beauty. You just need to write a single line. And I tell people that it's poetry. So that's poetry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But I mean, there's no rules to life in that way, right? Like, I mean, to art, I should say. There's definitely rules in society. But, you know, part of the individuation process is breaking free of the rules, right?
Yes, that's the step one. The step one is to have no rules. And the second step is to find your own rules and stick with it.
So what are you? Do you have your own rules right now actually written out? Or is it like just something in your head? What kind of conclusions have you come to, like all these life experiences? Where are you at right now and today?
Well, I was just saying, writing poetry, I'm actually like trying to read more other people's work, like try to accumulate my vocabulary. As you can see from this book, my vocabulary is not very good. And I'm actually trying to learn like from, say, like, you know, different like old poems, how the form are be done, what are the rhythm be done. I'm actually like trying to learn it properly, not be like, oh, I'm just going to be free. I'm just going to write whatever I can. I'm such a talented person. No, I don't believe that anymore. I need like proper practice to be good.
Oh, you mean working on the craft of poetry?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's always one of the tricks, right? The craft of it, and then the knowing the rules so you can break them kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like saying about that, like, I think if you say, oh, like life is about like breaking out like all the boundaries and, you know, like there's no actually no rule, do whatever you want. It's quite dangerous. That's how all these cults get everyone. That's what I thought. Because they can say whatever like they want, and then if you actually resist, they were like, oh, you're not actually so enlightened, like you should like break free from all of these. It doesn't matter. No, it's important. This is something I learned very recently. It's important to, like, after you break free from the old cage, you have a new walls around your city. It's very important.
And new walls around your city.
Yes.
You mean... What do you mean? What kind of walls for you? Do you mean like emotional walls or something that protects you from certain things? Or what do you mean by that?
Like reasonable boundaries.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. For yourself, kind of knowing where your boundary is and making sure people in your life and work or other things don't sort of cross into that too much?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like also just like some like personal standards. Like I should wake up every morning, write like five lines at least every single week.
Okay.
I should have at least 5 days write a poem.
Oh yeah. So having practices that not just the hey, I'm gonna wait for inspiration to strike, but actually having a practice for the craft so you can improve.
Yeah.
Yeah. The primary artistic avenues that you explore is painting, music, and poetry. Is that right? Sounds like photography too.
Yeah.
Are you an artist full time? Are these just things that you like to do? How do you balance? Yeah.
That's my aspiration. Like I'm a young kid, don't know. Like if you look at it seriously, like I'm just like, you know, very young and I'm like still trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. I don't have like a proper career yet.
We're all trying to figure it out. We're all trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I wish I can become a full time. I can actually like support myself financially with my artwork, but it's a super difficult thing to do so far.
Mm, yeah. What are you attracted to the most right now as far as expression?
Like which
yeah.
medium?
Yeah.
I'll say writing and music.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. There was something very similar with these two. Because like music have a form, poetry as well. Music kind of rhymes. Can make them, yeah. And then the poetry need to do a similar thing. So I think those ones I'm like, most like to do the most, and I think that's these two are the ones which is very can take you outside of planet Earth easily,
yes,
most easily
take you away. I love that feeling.
Yeah,
when you look at your watch and you realize like 4 hours had gone by and you don't know where you disappeared to. It's an awesome feeling. Yeah, and they both have structure and form that can also be interpreted any which way by different individuals. And what individuals can do with music and writing and poetry, it's magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did the solitude portion of the trip enhance your creativity?
Oh, so... When everyone started to create something, you probably have a hero in your head. Like, you know, you're going to copy their style because they're so cool. But then if you're solitude, you kind of make a space and you allow your own stuff grow out. So you kind of like become unique.
Yeah. So did the trip help you kind of work through that process to find your own voice?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Did you camp the whole time?
Not every day, but most of the days.
Okay. And did you just find random places to camp anywhere? Because you can wild camp in Scotland. Was that?
Yeah. If it's like good weather, I'm not so sweaty. I do wild camping. If I'm so sweaty and I need hot water to shower, I'll stay in campsite.
Then you stay in a campsite. Okay. And you could find a lot of those on the way. Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious with the trip you took. Always nice to get some travel tips or some of the highlights for you, just from a traveler's perspective. What would you say to somebody else considering like, well, this sounds solo bikepacking journey around the Scottish Highlands and Orkney Islands. That sounds amazing. What do I do? How do I plan it? What advice would you give that person?
Make sure you have enough food. Cause like there was not much supermarket on the way, especially if you get to the West Coast.
That's an important tip then. You have to carry a lot of your food with you.
Yeah, it was so funny. Like there was one day I was like, oh, it's going to be fine. Like look on the map, there are so many towns. I'm sure all of this town's gonna have like a supermarket. I can get something to eat. And then when I get there, like there was like a big landmark on the map, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be like a town. And I went there as a bridge. There's
You're like, this bridge isn't a supermarket.
Yeah, it's like when I'm there, I'm like, should I laugh at myself? It's like I'm so hungry, I'm like starving to death, and then I guess especially that area,
and you're burning
like,
so many calories because you're cycling. That's insane.
I'm like, should I laugh? Should I sit down and cry?
Yeah, right. Which did you choose?
Well, yes.
Did you take out your fork and knife and start cutting into the bridge? You're like, well, I guess it's come
no,
to this.
It's so awkward. Like, there was like people passing by. I was like trying to get them, and they were like, oh, so what's going on? I was like, I'm sorry, I'm starving. Can you give me some food?
Did they?
They did.
Oh, that's nice. So these are like the random acts of kindness that you experience along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you experience a lot of those types of moments?
Loads. It's yeah. So nice. I think like, to be honest, it's just like when we were in a city, we think, or like in our like normal life, we think, oh, there's like people are not so nice. You need like, you know, there's boundaries. But I think everyone should get the like the mentality when you are traveling. Because, you know, you're excited. You're like, you're sure like people is going to be nice to you. So they actually do.
Oh, yeah. So because you're saying the energy you put out reflects back in the form of the people you meet and things like that. Because you have the expectation that maybe you're going to interact and people will be, the world's nice and that sort of thing. Is that what you mean? And that gets reciprocated back? It's because of the mindset, you think? Or...
Yeah. I think so. Like the energy, the mindset, and also like if you're expecting something so nice from others, they will feel so good about themselves as well, because you're like, you're a kind person, and we all want to be a kind person.
It feels good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, committing a random act of kindness is great for both people, right? It makes the person, the receiver feel great, and it makes the giver feel awesome too. I feel like this is something great. Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. It's like I met so many like fun people. I met my old man friend in Orkney. I stayed with him for many days, and he's like 75-year-old. Very, he used to be in the army and very, very strong.
How did you guys become friends?
Oh, like I got my period. I can't cycle. I'm like dead completely. So I have to find someone to stay. So I end up in his house, and then he's like. He used to box. I used to box as well. And yeah. And I was just like, it'd be the very random. And then he always take the guests out to cycle. And I went, but like, because he is very fit. He always need to wait others, but I'm like not so dead. And he's so happy. He was like, oh my God, I don't need to wait anymore. Like, I can actually race you. I was like, yeah. And then I showed him my DJ set. He loved it. And then we were like talking about, like very random stuff, and he is so funny. Like we're just constantly joking about stuff. Both of us love sticky toffee pudding. We were like going to supermarket, buy all the sticky different brands of sticky toffee pudding, and then we would do like a tasting session.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and then yeah, I still like go to see him every year. I mean, it's only 2 years ago. So I saw him last year as well.
Was he a traveler, or was he like one of the owners of one of the campsites or something?
He says he's like the owner of the bed and breakfast.
Okay. Like, what's it called? Yeah. Let's give him a shout out here.
Oh yeah. It's I actually can't, I find on the map. I can't pronounce.
If I show up and be like, hey, I'm friends with CD17, and then he'll be like, hey, come on in. We got your best room for you, and you know all the-
oh yeah, you should visit. It's a lovely converted boat, like old boat factory. It's let me find. It's in Stromness.
Well, we can link up to it so people can check it out. We'll give him what's his name.
His name is Chris.
Chris, sorry, we'll give Chris a shout out and link to his his B&B. Hey Chris,
it's probably gonna be like, don't mention me. I want to be a quiet, happy old man.
Bringing all these people here. No. Yeah, well, I mean, the people you meet, that's obviously huge part of any trip, right?
I mean, and there was a very important, like two of the people, like in the West Coast, there was this lighthouse, like called Rural Raid Lighthouse. Everyone can go visit. Please, please go spend some money there. So the owner is Iranian Scottish woman, and she's super nice. She cooked the best food. I met her and her son the first time I went there, the trip when I want to go suicide. And then, what was it? I just got along with her very much. Like, she reminds me of my grandma. Like, she's also, like, very brave, very, like, interesting. She's an artist herself. And then her son was, like, end up, like, same age as me. And at the first time, like, we were, like, none of us like each other. And then, like, the second time I visit, because he was applying to, like, university in London, and he didn't get accepted. So I because his mom was so nice to me, I was like, oh, come to London and visit. And then now we are, like, very, very close friends. I would say that's, like, the best thing happened on the trip, because I met these two, especially the boy.
Awesome. I've had such a nice time chatting with you today. I've really enjoyed the conversation and your spirit and the energy you bring. We're not in the same room, but I can feel your positivity shining through here on the screen. And I hope that if you come through Norway, you'll look me up and I'll do the same. Maybe we can do a part two in person. Do you want to read a little poem? We should give it the book a shout out one more time. You don't have to, or we can skip that. But if you'd like to, we would love to hear one. If you want to just pick one. And The Weights We Carry, you want to talk about the title? Why The Weights We Carry?
Oh, because each of the poem is kind of like one thing you should, you know, like break free from to reach your individuation. So it's a weight we all carry from our ancestors, from our nation, from our society. So, yeah.
I love that. So maybe I like to leave folks with a challenge that are listening sometimes. Perhaps that could be the challenge for the day coming out of this podcast, is to let go of a little weight, whatever that means to you. Could be a good one, huh?
Mm-hmm. Shall I read one?
Yes, please, if you don't mind.
Yes, I'm going to read this one, like, because I found lots of people, especially in London, like they work a little bit too much, but you know, but like it's kind of like become the slave of capitalism. Yes, I'm trying to avoid it, but I'm sure one day I will become as well. Yeah.
This one called?
It's called Hope.
Okay.
So, are you scared of the wind? Sitting on rocks with white trousers. There are a million of efforts designed for city species who couldn't conquer the hills, but sit for 24 hours. Real heroes swallowing pain or trying to work in vain. Kids with no faith won't move their brains, so get used to bury your cousins for a good name. But why would we need revolutions if there's a house with hot showers near purple flowers, just us and the sky?
Thank you so much for that. And again, we'll link up to everything we mentioned. The Weights We Carry, poems from a solo bikepacking journey around the Scottish Highlands and the Orkney Islands by CD17. You can look that up and I'm looking at that poem right here. Lovely pictures of horses and the nice little painting. Thanks for your time. It was such a pleasure getting to know you, and I wish you the best of luck with everything and hope we can stay in touch here and there.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. It was lovely to talk to you. I'm going to start my Europe trip like on Thursday. So if I go past your area, I'll give you a shout.
Please do. Where are you going? Where are you going to be going?
I'm going to start a trip in Germany. I'm going to go to my old favorite place. I'm going to go to Berlin and then see how it goes.
Awesome. Well, have a great time and safe travels, and wish you the best of luck.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Take care. There you have it. I want to thank 17 for stopping by the show and just sharing in the way that she does. I really admire her courage to share, to speak out, and that's something I've never had to deal with personally. I come from places where you can speak out about authority figures or systems or anything else, and you can do that without repercussions. And I don't know what the rules are in terms of speaking out against certain entities as a member of a certain society. This is across the world, right? I mean, there are nuances there, but to speak out at all, it takes guts. And I appreciate her spending the time here to share her story. We'll leave you with a quote from the book in a moment. Just a quick reminder to get in touch. If you've never done so, you can leave me a voicemail, drop me an email, jason@zerototravel.com. Sign up for the free newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. I send one out once a week with travel tips, advice, musings, all that good stuff. zerototravel.com/newsletter. If you've been putting that off, sign up. It's free. Okay, here's a little snippet from a poem from CD17's book, The Weights We Carry. This poem was called Farewell. Just three lines here I'm going to share. The voice of the sea, the voice of me, how were dreams born? And as you go about your day, what dreams will be perhaps reborn? What new dreams will be born today? Who knows? But you can ponder that as I let you go. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.